5. Okay. Welcome back, members, after the brief interim. Brief is the unfortunate word. It didn't seem like it, did it? Only seems like yesterday that we were here. We have two items on the agenda today. One is an overview by our friends at Finance as to the governor's recommendations for capital investment, and the other is a bill for Mounds View. And since we don't have a quorum, we'll start with the overview. And coming to us from Finance is the Commissioner, Commissioner Ingerson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I think that you should have as part of your packet a packet that is a set of PowerPoint slides that I'll be working off of as an overview of the governor's capital budget recommendations, and also a summary booklet with the governor's capital budget recommendations. And Mr. Chairman, as we talked about, I think that I know that your committee has spent a lot of time touring, looking at projects, and maybe having hearings on some of these. So I'll work through the governor's an overview here pretty quickly so that people can then ask questions about specific things.
Sure. Well, you know, before we go down to Commissioner, I'm looking at least at this one. I think this was what came out when the governor released his budget. Is it going to be amended because of the passage of the stadium in Duluth? Are that reflected in here somewhere, or if you just maybe address that issue before we go into the overview?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I have not talked with the governor about that yet since the passage, so I'm not sure what his plans are as far as any supplemental or changes to his recommendations, if he'll be sending something over here. But I certainly will talk to him about that and get back to you. I don't know if he would be adding something or changing some other things in his recommendations, but I certainly will follow up on that.
Okay. I just thought that since he made his announcement that he would have had our plan in place, but okay. With that, let's go into the overview.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and members, on the first slide, it talks about the total recommendations, $897 million. The amount that we talk about as general fund, supporting the general obligation bonding portion that we use as a measure of our debt capacity is $811 million. If you look at the next page, this is just kind of giving a little bit of an overview about the capital budget that was approved last year, and really recognizing that an awful lot of that is still what we describe as in the pipeline, projects that are yet to be moving ahead in large measure. We also had a little bit of challenge because of the significant number of requests. We had over $2 billion in new capital requests, nearly half of that from higher education and local units of government. Generally, one of the things that the governor talked about when he presented his recommendation is kind of the concern that he had about the lack of consensus and consistent criteria in looking at some of these kind of regional event center, what he's describing as amenity projects. And his concern was that the state has funded some of these kinds of projects in the past to different degrees and different levels and different matching requirements. And then with a large number of these in the request and some limited capacity to deal with this, he raised the issue that this he had some concerns about this, and he was trying to sort out what priorities would be as he was putting his recommendations together. And I'll talk about that a little bit more later, because he talked about being interested in seeing the legislature maybe consider some criteria that might be consistent in the way we look at those projects.
And maybe at the same time you could tell us, you know, if I took from his message and I was trying to listen carefully about local government projects, you know, one might be surprised to see any in there. And so, you know, if I look at the St. Cloud Airport as the standard, it seems like there's an awful lot of projects that he chose not to leave or not to put in. That I'm just wondering what made that one worthy of inclusion or any of the local projects. I mean, I was a little confused when I listened to his words, and I hear what you're saying, yet I'm just trying to figure out what the standard is. So if you could help us understand that would be better.
I'll try to do that, Mr. Chair, as we talk through those projects. The next chart just talks generally about how we try to look at the decisions in a balanced way to kind of really look at where there might be some investments that are a little bit more strategic in terms of longer-term benefits, and looking at the regional issues versus the statewide issues when we look at some of the projects, and then kind of to what extent we spend the resources managing the existing obligations and repairing and enhancing the value of the assets we currently have versus expanding and new projects. And then also to really keep an eye on the operating cost impacts in the operating budget as well as the debt service costs. Mr. Chairman, as you know, when we look at the capital budget in the year that isn't connected with the biennial budget, we have some challenges in trying to kind of fit these things together. And so those are some of the things that we gave consideration to. If you look at the chart on the top of page 3, this is a question that we generally get asked in looking at how projects are distributed around the state. Geographically, roughly 60% are in greater Minnesota, about 40% in the seven-county metro area, and that's not a particularly precise analysis. There are a number of projects where we are often unclear about where the location is, but that was just our kind of rough generalization looking at the projects.
What do you think, Commissioner? What's the significance of that? Why is that important?
Mr. Chair, I'm glad you asked the question because I have trouble taking that seriously into account as we're looking at projects and looking at needs of the state. I think it's generally sitting here because people ask us about it, because they see it having some other kind of meaning. And I think when you look at where the state's resources and assets are, it probably isn't an illogical breakdown. Then the chart on the bottom of page 3, Mr. Chair and members, shows how the financing breaks down. I mentioned that of the $897 million, $811 is what we use general fund to support the general obligation bonds with. There's about $44 million in general obligation bonds that we call user financing. These are funds that are used to pay the debt service costs other than directly from the general fund appropriation for debt service. There's also a small amount of general fund money included in the governor's recommendations, as well as some $35 million in trunk highway bonds. And, Mr. Chair, the chart on the top of page 4 just gives you a little bit of an idea about the historical level of capital funding. We have often had some discussion about what is the total capacity, and maybe it would be time for me to also kind of insert in here that the updated debt capacity as a result of yesterday's forecast release is now $990 million. And this is the size of a bonding bill that could be accommodated within the guideline that the state has set to spend no more than 3% of our general obligation revenues on debt service. And so that has increased somewhat from the November forecast. But Mr. Chair, I think your committee and members have had some discussions about our guidelines in the past. But we looked at the past bonding history, looked at the needs, and looking at this chart will show you that we've obviously had much higher bonding bills in the last 10 to 12 years or so. This is why the guidelines become very important to us, because with the bonding bill, we don't have the normal tension that we have in an operating budget where you have to have revenues to pay for your spending, and you have that trade-off in tension. When we do a bonding bill, we're actually not recognizing the cost of that benefit we get for the project, but over possibly a 20-year time limit. And so the guidelines are important to help make sure that we preserve some capacity for bonding projects in the future, as often many of our needs are somewhat ongoing, of an ongoing nature, and then to make sure that we're not overextending ourselves, because these are commitments that we're making for 20 years.
While you're inserting, help us understand either relative to what the additional debt service will be required in the governor's proposal based from the forecast, both this biennium and next, and then what would it take to go to 990? What kind of dollars are we talking about?
Mr. Chairman, I just have some updated information, because actually at the time that we presented the governor's budget recommendations, it was based on our assumptions of the November forecast. And now what is included in our budget forecast is an assumption of a bonding bill of about $560 million. The reason we do this is that typically our forecast is based on current law, and because there isn't a bonding bill in place, we would otherwise under current law just be showing zero. But we recognize that the bonding bills are typically passed in this off-year session, and so we build in some assumptions based on a 10-year rolling average. So in our forecast, we've included debt service that would finance a $560 million bonding bill. What is needed to cover the additional debt service that's needed to cover the governor's recommendations are about $4.3 million in this current biennium, and the cost in the next biennium is about $44 million. If we were, when we did the forecast in November, the maximum capacity under that 3% guideline was $965 million. It's now $990 million. And the debt service that would be required to, the additional debt service over and above what's included in the forecast, would, to get to that higher limit, would be about $7.7 million in the current biennium, and then the cost in the next biennium is $74 million. So as you can see, and as you know, Mr. Chairman and members, the difficulty is that it's cost little in the current biennium in terms of the change in the overall bonding bill, but it starts to show up more in the next two-year budget period and the one following that, because we make some assumptions about cash flow as well.
Mm-hmm. Representative Solberg has a question on this point.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, but how does that relate to the bonds that are coming off as well? I mean, you're saying that cost in the next biennium is if we did not have a bonding bill, period. But how does that relate to, you obviously have some bonds that are coming off from being paid off in the next biennium as well. Is that the net of those?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, I don't think I said that we wouldn't have any costs if we didn't have a bonding bill. We have, our debt service costs currently are pretty significant.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, I understand that. But that's already in the forecast. That's money that's obligated. I'm asking, is the $74 million net of those that are going off, being paid off?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Solberg, it's additional debt service costs over and above what is currently forecast. In the forecast, we have some decline assumption that the debt service would be declining based on the bonds being paid off. So
this is net.
This would be the net additional funding.
Thank you, Madam, Mr. Chair.
That might be a good place, a good point to stop. No, we don't have Denny here yet. We have Alice. All right. We're gonna cease for a moment. So we'll call this meeting to order, and I'm going to turn the gavel over to my good friend from St. Paul, and we're going to actually do a bill. So, Commissioner, sorry, but
okay.
You just relax
right.
Here a little bit.
I got hurt too.
Don't
Do we literally, he... So Representative Dorman, do you want to move your bill, and then do you include in that motion where it goes?
Absolutely, Madam Chair. I would move that House File Number 2623 be recommended to pass and sent to the
General Register.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Before us is a little item that we all talked about last year. It was included in last year's bonding bill, and it was some dollars that were directed to Manzio, Ramsey, and Anoka counties, and dealing with some money for a Medtronic project out there, and we think it's very important that we get that done. Apparently there was some a problem with the language that was passed in the bill. It's kind of interesting. There's a problem. Nobody wants to take responsibility. Kept hearing people say, well, the legislature's language didn't work, and I kept thinking, where did we get that language? And I think I saw the guy responsible for it sneak in here, Ward Inez. I think he drafted it. We're blaming Ward. He's the guy that gave us the language. And so and I thought that was interesting. But that's a side note. To my left, and you're not sending a lot of that. That's at all. Commissioner Tony Bennett. I'll turn it over to him and see what he has to say, and then we'll stand for any questions, and if they're difficult, I'll avoid them.
Commissioner Bennett,
Madam Chair,
to the
for the record, Tony Bennett, Chair of the Ramsey County Board of Commissioners. This is some cleanup language. It's on a fast trick because it needs to be out of this body and out of the Senate and signed by the governor by the 15th of March so we don't hold up the project. We need to let some contracts and put some people to work. Medtronic, if you haven't heard, has expedited their project to the degree they started this year with the first phase, and they were going to do the second phase in 3 years. They have now moved that up to this year. They're going to do it all at one time. Ramsey County is the lead agency in doing all the work around it, and this language needs to be passed in the form that it's in. It has been approved by the Finance Committee, Peter Sawson, who was here, the Dorsey Whitney firm, the bonding people have looked at it, our attorneys have looked at it, and they assure me, Ward, that it is totally correct, so, and it's ready to go.
Any further information, or otherwise, are there questions the committee has of Commissioner Bennett or the author, Dorman? Yes, Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dorman, is this a grant to a municipality for public, for infrastructure improvements to a private business?
Is that for Representative Dorman or?
Or somebody.
Representative Solberg, this is for all the road work and everything around it. It's not only going to serve Medtronic, it's going to serve Wells Fargo and some other industries out there with the work that's being done.
With infrastructure.
Infrastructure, correct.
Is it more than just road? Is it also water, sewer?
It's everything in connection with it.
So more than just roads, Madam Chair, more than just roads, water, sewer.
Yeah, water.
Gas.
Storm sewer.
Yep. Adjustments for utilities. Thank you.
Further
brought back up.
Just laying some foundation.
Other questions of the author? If not, Representative Dorman renews his motion that House File 2623 be passed and referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion carries.
Thank
you. House File 2623 to the General Register. Now, is he going to...
Okay. Okay. Well, we are back. We've got the commissioner with us. I should point out a couple of things before we go on that Joe Pass looks a lot different than he used to. Representative Dorn from Mankato is replacing Representative Opatz on the committee, and we certainly welcome him and look forward to hearing his ideas on things happening down in that neck of the woods, and should introduce our Where's our page? There he is. There's our page. It's Seb?
Seb.
Seb? Bowman.
Right.
Exactly. He's from, where are you from?
St. Paul.
St. Paul. This is St. Paul, and he'll be with us hopefully for the duration. So thank you and welcome, and Representative Dorn, welcome. We look forward to having you on the committee. With that, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think I'll move now to the chart on the bottom of page 4, and this is just a give you an idea of the areas of the budget generally where the governor's recommendations land. Education, including both higher education and K-12 education, $289 million. Environment and agriculture, $209 million. Transportation, $141 million. Health and Human Services at 80, Criminal Justice 70 million, Economic Development 63, State Agencies at 30, and Local Projects at 13. And Mr. Chair, maybe as you have expressed an interest in kind of the local projects, maybe I should just be clear about how we categorize things here in the capital budget recommendations, because a large number of the programs that are inside particular agencies like environment, transportation, economic development are for projects of a local nature that benefit, for example, local trails and those kinds of things. Transportation includes an awful lot of funding for local bridges. The economic development area includes a lot of the wastewater projects that are local projects statewide. So when we talk about local projects, it's probably not a good assumption to make in looking at this chart and saying there's only $13 million in local projects. There are projects that are actually not state-owned facilities or infrastructure throughout, but many of the projects go through the state agencies. And Mr. Chair, moving on to page 5, I'll just kind of quickly go through these, an overview in these particular areas, because I know that you're all probably pretty familiar with a number of the projects already. But the governor's recommendations for the University of Minnesota are $127.6 million, $40 million for the asset preservation projects at the U, $26.6 million for the Carlson School project, a new facility there, new building for the Lobovitz School of Business and Economics up in Duluth for $13.3 million, and new science teaching and student services building in Minneapolis. And again, these are kind of the highlights, not necessarily being all-inclusive of the projects. The next chart for the Minsky system, there's $142.5 million, $32.9 million among the larger projects for a new science addition at Mankato, asset preservation projects of $20 million, the science addition at St. Cloud for $14 million, the Nursing and Allied Health Training Center in Minneapolis campus, $18.9 million, new science building and library at Century College for almost $20 million, and then a number of projects funded under the science system-wide projects for $5.1
million. I'm confused. Commissioner, maybe you can help me clear this up. Maybe I misunderstood the recommendation. If I look at this, it looks like we're going to send $127 million to the university for their bonding needs, and $142.5 million to Minsky. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and let me just kind of explain this, because there's a little bit of a difference between the way the University of Minnesota bonding projects are funded by the state and the Minsky projects. The University of Minnesota, typically, policy began several years ago that I'm sure you're familiar with, where we talk about user financing for higher education projects, about a third of the debt service and the projects funded by the operating funds or other funds of the university, either the University of Minnesota or the Minsky system, and those are what we generally call user financing. So for the Minsky system, this is the total of the bonding projects and includes both the two-thirds state funds financing the debt service and the local, what we call the local share of that, or the user financing at about a third of the debt service paid by the Minsky projects. The exception is the asset preservation projects, which are 100% financed by state debt service. For the University of Minnesota, it's a little bit different in that we're appropriating, we appropriate the state funds to the University of Minnesota. The university has separate independent authority to authorize their own bonds. So it's never, they don't make the, we're not authorizing the bonds and the university, having the university is authorizing their own debt, issuing their own debt for their share of the bonding project. So that what's reflected here is a little different in actually making the comparison. And I know, Mr. Chair, that at one point we actually did more of an apples and apples comparison, but I don't have that with me right now.
Right. Well, and that's, you know, I'm a suspicious guy. And the way this was written and the way it got reported in the press, it looked like, boy, Minsky is getting more money than the U. And I think in actuality, that's not the case. And so I think that whether it was your intention was to mislead, I certainly hope that wasn't the case. But it does look kind of odd because I think you know that people are going to look at that and say, well, it's $127 million for the U and $142 for Minsky. And gee, the Minsky people, they just didn't feel really like they were getting that much more. And so I was just kind of curious about why present it that way.
Mr. Chair, I think that certainly there was no intention to mislead, but I understand the reason for the confusion, and we probably could have been much more clear about it. I think it's partly our effort to make sure everything tallies up to the numbers in the front. In fact, this the University of Minnesota share is really outside of the picture. If we were actually doing the comparison apples and apples, we would probably be showing the Minsky projects at similarly with just showing the two-thirds financing. However, the state is authorizing general obligation bonds for that user financing there as well.
Okay. Representative Pawlowski has an inquiry in this area. Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, I have an inquiry. I have heard a rumor about a special type of bonding category that's going to be created that would have, if it's a building that has a significant amount of private funds, that the University of Minnesota, and I suppose the Minsky system, would have a new type of bonding category, and this category would extend beyond the length of time of the legislative session, so that if, I'll use the University of Minnesota for example, if a private donor came and said, I'm going to give $10 or $20 or $30 million for a building, that at the discretion of the governor, he would then allocate whatever the remaining amount was, and there would be no legislative input into that. Can you enlighten me if such a category is going to be created, and is it in this?
Mr. Chair and Representative Pawlowski, I'm not sure that I can help you out very much on this. I understand and am aware of a proposal. It's not included in the governor's recommendation. I do know that the University of Minnesota in particular has been talking about the need to be more, I guess I would describe it as kind of nimble in terms of being able to move ahead with particularly bioscience and technology kinds of facilities, that difficulty seeing those projects compete with other projects in the size of a bonding bill. And so they are talking about a proposal which would have some of the characteristics as you describe that is not included in the governor's recommendations at this point.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, are we then looking at something that would come forward before the end of this session that the governor would propose, and that at least the University of Minnesota would then have a new category for bonding, and it would involve private sector money? My concern here is this, that if a new category is created and it has a significant amount of private sector money, my concern is the discretion that I have heard the governor would have to release whatever is the difference from the state with no legislative input. That suddenly it would be at the largesse of the governor that he would say, all right, $10 million would come from the state, then we'll put $10 in and make it complete. Are we going to see that before the end of this session?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Pawlowski, it's not included in the governor's recommendations at this point. I have not talked to the governor about the proposal. I think you raised some interesting concerns. I have heard that there are a number of folks supporting a situation that would actually have the legislature, it wouldn't be a situation where without the legislature deciding to authorize the bonds, could any bonds ever be sold. My understanding of the arrangement would be that the legislature would authorize a higher dollar amount of bonding authority that would be spread out over the future for these kinds of projects. There isn't anything that actually constitutionally would happen that would allow the governor to authorize bonds that the legislature doesn't authorize.
Well, Mr. Chair and Commissioner, then it's likely we will see this category this session.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, it's not anything that is included in the governor's recommendation. I feel like I'm spending a lot of time talking about something that I've only heard about from others. It's not in the governor's recommendation. I have not talked to the governor about it. I know that there are a number of legislators and others who are supporting it. I think it's up to you, the legislature, as to whether or not anything happens on this.
Okay. Commissioner, I think the reason you're spending so much time on it and the frustration is we don't know anything about it. Or at least you're saying some legislators are supporting it. Must mean there's a plan out there. I think Representative Pawlowski is trying to say, anybody seen it? Know what it looks like?
Yeah.
The question I was going to ask earlier, and I will ask you now, what my concern is it seems to be an effort to get around the 3% debt limit would be in there too. And I'm just curious, is the 3% that meaningless that we just throw it out, or that's my concern about it. A whole bunch of things. Now our caucus, is going to, I would imagine, have major problems with it on a constitutional basis after all the questions they had last year. So I can't imagine it's going to be in too high a shape either. But we'll see. But what about the 3%?
Mr. Chair, I guess I apologize, but I'm feeling some of the same frustrations. I've heard from about 8 people on the last day about this project, about this arrangement. I know something about it, seeing a proposal from the University of Minnesota. And my understanding, Mr. Chair, of the way this would work is that you would authorize a larger dollar amount, and this would actually be kind of earmarking a piece of future bonding bills that would be set aside for this purpose. I think it would still be within the 3% limitations, but you would today authorize bonding authority that would be scheduled out over time in the future. And Mr. Chair, I think you're raising appropriate concerns about this. I don't feel like I'm in a position to suggest what the benefits of this are. I think the university would probably want to make the case about why it's important to be better positioned to be able to be competitive in this biotech race for facilities and projects.
And I think the frustration is directed at you and for it shouldn't be, sorry, but you're there and we don't have the governor there, we don't
right.
have the chief of staff and everything, so you're on the hot seat. And for that I apologize, but it comes
okay.
with the pay, I guess, right?
That's all right.
We have a few questions on this topic, and then we'll try to get through the overview, or at least move that way. And so if members at least keep the questions on the topic like we have been, that'd be great. Representative Kahn, Mahoney, Solberg, and Hausman. Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, first of all, let me ask about the 3%.
That's the way.
Which is, know by now, but does the 3% mean the bonds that are out at any time, or the bonds, or the total authorized bonds? So these numbers, I thought it meant the bonds that are out at any time. So that, but anyway, why don't you tell us what the 3% is?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, the 3% applies to basically our operating budget. When we look at the $31 billion in state funds, it's the debt service amount, the money that's being paid on bonds that are currently outstanding. It includes a number of assumptions about what we expect to sell and issue of bonds that are authorized but currently unsold. So it's the total amount that we would pay out in any biennium related to debt service payments on currently outstanding or future to be sold within this period.
but only within the period.
Right.
So, Mr. Chairman, so something that may take place over a number of years, or even for a big project where we expect to do it in phases, even if there's been a higher number in the bonding bill, so it's authorized, it doesn't count against the 3% until we actually know that the bonds are going out.
Commissioner.
That's right, Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn. What we look at is a cash flow assumption. And we have, as you see from the chart on the top of page 4, there's an awful lot of pretty large bonding bills in the last several years, and there are currently a lot of those bonds that have not been issued. And I can look and see if I have the numbers with me. I could tell you the total authorized outstanding, total outstanding, and then the amount remaining that's authorized and not yet sold.
No, I don't, Mr. Chairman, I don't think I need to know that. I just wanted to make it clear on the concept. And then, first of all, I think members ought to know how meaningless this 3% is. It is 3%. It is 3% of the general fund, isn't it?
Not a Representative Kahn, as I recover from that, yes, it is 3% of the general fund.
So anything that's in the budget, of course, at one point, one of my former colleagues tried to set up a whole set of special funds that you would then bond against. We had a special tax on health clubs and that kind of thing, which helped us do sports facilities, which would then be to get rid of any kind of limits that we had. And, of course, in the first year that they went to the bonding company says, that looks like general fund to us. So we sort of got rid of that nonsense and put it back in. But the 3% is a meaningless number, and we can just...
I don't know if it's meaningless, it's just...
It's
a number.
Right. As long as you consider it as just a number instead of a number that came down from God as the 11th commandment.
It was not. No, it was not on the tablet that was dropped.
Okay. And then the final question is about this university thing. The university has its own independent bonding authority, which it can use without any input from the legislature at all. Isn't that true?
That's my understanding, but I've been wrong several times only today. Commissioner, not that you would be expected to understand the ability of the University of Minnesota, but I believe they can bond independent of us as well.
Mr. Chair, that's right.
You know,
they never have.
Before we move past the 3%, let me ask you this. The fee formerly known as a tax, doesn't that impact that 3% number?
Mr. Chair, yes. What we have calculated that if we were to if the Supreme Court rules that the health impact fund, we're no longer able to collect that, that would take revenues out of the general fund and reduce the capacity that we've now said in this forecast is $990 million. It would be reduced to about $960 million.
But had we called it a tax rather than a fee formerly known as a tax, wouldn't that have increased our bonding capacity? Because didn't we, is that how we set that up? We said this fee formerly known as a tax used to go into the general fund, and now it doesn't. So did that reduce our bonding capacity by 3% of $400 million?
Mr. Chairman, no. It is included in the general fund as a non-dedicated receipt. It sits in the health impact fund, but it gets transferred into the general fund and is not dedicated. So it is included in our forecast of debt capacity and the 3%.
Got it. Okay. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this isn't a question for the commissioner, but it was a question for you. This 300 and some odd million dollars that various legislative personnel have been talked to about. Now, you're the chair of the House Bonding Committee. That would kind of put you in a leadership role on bonding as a state.
Depends if you ask Representative Mahoney, but...
Well, my question to you is, has anyone, the university, the governor's office, you know, anybody, maybe even the speakers, have you had any conversations about this?
Very cursory. Very limited, not
No. I would think that, you know what, if it were me, this is just me, but I probably would approach things and maybe have informed the whole committee sooner than they are, but, you know, to each their own. I can't control how the University of Minnesota chooses to bring information forward, you know.
With cursory, like, that's a kind of a spongible kind of number.
Spongible. I have about the awareness of it as represents philosophy.
So would that be like 5 minutes, or would it be a half an hour or an hour?
7.5 minutes.
Okay, thank you.
We're 3.5 million, 350 million. That's not bad.
Not bad. Hadn't passed though, Representative Mahoney.
It hasn't?
No. I think it has to pass. I think it has to pass. Again, I don't know. Representative Solberg, you've been patient.
Thank you. Well, the university did present their proposal to me without any question. It's a way of getting past the 3%, doing some obligation, increasing the size of the bonding bill. Mm-hmm. But keep in mind, we've done that in the past. All you have to do is look at the two buildings, the new buildings on the Capital Area Complex, the Anderson Building and the Freeman Building. They were our state buildings. They were outside the 3% because what they did is said the university or the St. Paul Fair Authority, you build the buildings, we'll pay the debt service on them through the general operating budget of the Department of Agriculture and so forth. And so it was a way of getting around the 3%. This is not something new. In fact, as I notice in the book as I go through it, we're going to have another request for $1.5 million for the facility labs to do some additional things in the lab work down there. Whether we like the project or not, I just want to point out that was a way of getting back behind the 3%, and I don't particularly like that process. I think that if we're going to have capital bonding, we should have capital bonding come through here, pay the debt service as we're supposed to do, not hide it in someone else's budget, and I think I agree wholeheartedly with Phyllis Kahn that 3% is a guideline, but it's not the essential guideline. It's actually came down from God by a Rudy Perpich when he was in D.C. and Rudy said, "I can understand that. Let's do that," and it became law. But I think it's a good thing to observe.
And I think we may have an opportunity to vote on something else outside the 3% guideline as well, even though it's not for the university, but pretty darn close to a stadium.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, was the conversation that you had with the university more than 7.5 minutes?
It was about that. But I was able to understand their process.
Mr. Chair?
I'm a little slower.
Mr. Chair, could I ask, I think Representative Hausman, are you the lead, or is Representative Solberg the lead on Democratic DFL bonding?
Representative Hausman, I think in my sheets you are, but maybe there's been, you know, with the new deputy dog, has there been a... No, not deputy dog. What is the title, Margaret?
Deputy DFL leader.
Yeah, with the new deputy DFL leader, is she still the lead?
There's been no changes.
Mr. President Solberg, Mahoney, I don't know, but that I can't control who the university sets up an appointment with. I've been down here an awful lot the last 3 weeks, like 3 trips a week down here. They set up an appointment, they scheduled the meeting, they came in and explained it to me. My 7 minutes, I said that's as much as I need to know, and when I said, "Are you that a way of getting around the 3%?" they said yes. So
thank you, Mr. Representative. And Mr. Yeah. Chair, I think there's something seriously wrong here with the university, and the university might want to show up and kind of have a conversation with a whole set of apologies, criterias.
You know, Representative Mahoney, I you know, we'll see if the plan comes forward or what it is. I don't you know, maybe they know who the next Ways and Means Chair is going to be. I can't.
Maybe they know who the next governor is going to be. You can never
exactly
tell.
Right. You can never tell.
You just never tell.
Holbrook.
No, I didn't say that.
Oh, I didn't say that. Okay. Good rumor. All right. Wasn't that interesting? All right. Now we are actually not back to you yet, Representative Hausman.
Well, just since we were having this interesting discussion, I thought I would throw in one more, even though it's related to the local projects one. But the other sort of rumor out there, which did come apparently from the governor's office, one of the local projects that wasn't in his budget got a phone call from the governor's office, and they discussed the possibility of an amenities package that was still to come. Can we get that one out on the table, too, and say, what do we have some other proposals coming?
Commissioner Ingerson, and I did ask Deputy Dog, not this one, but what is that other guy's name? Tom Hansen. We'll call him Deputy Dog. Deputy Commissioner Hansen, and he tells me absolutely not that everything's on the table. But, Commissioner, what do you hear?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, I am not aware of something else that the governor might be considering. I certainly will follow up. The chairman asked me at the outset about the Duluth project, if the governor was going to change his recommendations. I'll certainly follow up. I have not had conversations about changes to the governor's capital recommendations at this point.
As far as you know, there's not some kind of called an amenities package.
Not
that,
right,
that was the term used.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, not that I am aware of it.
Okay, thank you. Representative Kahn?
My point was made. I just wanted to point out that Representative Solberg was making a speech in favor of my statement that 3% meant nothing. So he said that.
Note that down. The record will reflect that.
Mr. Chair,
tell us about the virtues of the 3%.
Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I'd just like to weigh in a little bit and indulge the committee on the guideline. I think
we don't have a target yet, so we got a lot of time.
Okay.
Weigh in.
Mr. Chair and members, it's a guideline. It's not in law. It's a guideline that we think is important. It's important, as I mentioned at the outset, that we don't have this normal kind of tension between revenue and spending like we do in the operating budget. So it's important to have something to guide us and to provide some discipline in the process, because we could be authorizing all kinds of bonds and incurring all kinds of debt if we tried to sell it, and we think it's responsible to have a guideline. And
Commissioner, we don't deal with transportation financing here. that's not what you meant? I apologize. I thought you were onto that transportation plan. Sleep for a minute there.
Mr. Chair?
And Mr. Chair, if I could say one more thing about the limits. Representative Solberg, you certainly point out that there are projects, that are capital projects that are state-owned, that are not financed with bonding, and it, I'll try to kind of stay away from my usual spiel about how we tend to fund projects for the benefit of local governments and other entities, and sometimes shirk our responsibility for state-owned facilities and buildings, because it's difficult in the bonding process for projects. State office buildings, for example, to generally get to be able to compete favorably in the process. I certainly think that, long-term lease arrangements like we have with those existing buildings are not unlike debt, and we do have another measure in our debt capacity guidelines that looks at long-term leases just as if they are debt. And we do incorporate things like that into that guideline.
Mr. Chair, just a quick question. Maybe either you or Mr. Salson can answer this. There are a couple of other guidelines that are probably more meaningful, not as completely understood, but more meaningful from bond counsel. And one of them is, I think, 2.5% of personal income or something. Can you just elaborate a little bit more and then translate that into what our bonding capacity would be with those more strict guidelines or more strict
Mr. Chairman, Representative Goldberg, there are several guidelines in our debt capacity guidelines. The one that I think you're talking about is one that would talk about total outstanding debt as a percentage of personal income.
Mm-hmm.
And when you describe them as more strict guidelines, there's the one that has been the limitation for us. We are a long ways from bumping up against the limits on the guidelines in our other guidelines. The one that has really been the limitation is the 3% on the operating budget. That's what has been the constraint. And so it's the others, I wouldn't characterize them as being more strict.
I understand, Solberg, that the 3% is easily understand. We can come up with that number real fast. And it's okay. I'm not saying we shouldn't try to abide by it. But as I understand it, and I may be wrong, bond councils and those that buy the bonds are more concerned about some of the other things that we're not even close to getting. And that's, I think, the 2.5% of personal income. My question is, if we were to use those other guidelines, what would our bonding capacity be? I'm not saying I want to violate the 3%. I want to know what our bonding capacity could be.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, we might be able to work on calculating something like that for you. I think I would just describe that not necessarily that certain of the guidelines are more important to rating agencies than others. Certainly there's a whole list of things other than our debt management guidelines that are of interest to rating agencies, reserves, the situation, the state economy. The guidelines kind of help us more or less make some internal discipline managing the overall impact on our budget. And I guess I would also say that we'll try to put something together that would suggest what it would be or what it could be. I think it's safe to say that the rating agencies look at a whole host of things when they rate the state, and that they consider Minnesota to have moderate debt.
Mr. Chair, I don't want the department to go through an awful lot of effort. It'd be kind of fun just to see approximately what those would be.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, we'll do a little back-of-the-envelope calculation and try to tell you what it could possibly be. I think by itself, it would be important to think about this in that broader context of the guidelines.
Obviously. Thank you.
Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, I've got a question on the HEPR, on the MinSCU system. I'm looking at the agency request and then the amount that the governor has in HEPR, there's a significant difference. And I'm looking on page 12 of the list of the HEPR projects. Can you tell me if the HEPR projects that are listed here, do they follow the criteria of the MinSCU system? Did you go down MinSCU's list and their number one is your number one? Or was there jumping around? And if there was jumping around, what was the rationale for going outside of the request list of MinSCU and HEPR?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pawlowski, I don't have the same book that you do, but I'm assuming that you're looking at the project summary of the MinSCU projects that shows that, for example, the HEPR projects, they had requested $110 million, where the governor recommended $20. And then it's the list that has the projects in their ranking of priority. I would say this, Representative Pawlowski, that the governor was kind of concerned about the size of the request that came from the MinSCU system. After considering the bonding bill that just passed this last session with a very sizable amount in authorizing projects for MinSCU, and so he was kind of frustrated at this overall size of requests given what had just passed this last session.
Commissioner, couldn't the same thing be said about the university, though? Could you maybe compare those requests? Well, I heard his words, but I don't think they, you know, I think you make the very same argument that he made there about the university. I wonder, team nod.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if I would say that there's absolute consistency between his thoughts about that, but I think he felt like the university request was maybe a little bit more reasonable. I think he felt generally that the higher ed requests were pretty generous in terms of the requests that they were making based on the fact that so much was funded in the last year's bill. And maybe he felt a little more strongly about that with Minsky.
Well, Mr. Chair, Commissioner, my concern is, of course, the overall number, but my other concern is in the projects that are going to be funded, am I looking at the ones that are an absolute need, or has there been a rearrangement here in HEPR of project funding? So am I looking at, again, I'm on page 12, and it lists projects. Can Minsky tell me, are these the top HEPR replacement projects, or... are we missing something, and what was the criteria used if you're jumping around?
Mr. Chair and Representative Pawlowski, we know that the Minsky folks, for their HEPR projects or their asset preservation projects, put together a very specific list of how they would spend all of that money. They told us very specifically they had not prioritized that list, and so they were not in a position to say what is more important than another. Is when we asked them for any kind of priorities of the list, they just said, this is our list of asset preservation projects, and they had not prioritized those.
The list on page 12 appears to be alphabetical. And
that's what I was thinking.
I'm not sure that Mr. Johnson's here from Minsky. You want to shed any light on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Alan Johnson from Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Representative Pawlowski's question, this is indeed alphabetical. It was the way we allocated higher education asset preservation funds to each campus. Each campus has a priority one, a priority two, a priority three. We don't make an attempt to try to prioritize the 165 projects, one through 165. But the governor's recommendation of $20 million in effect means that there are 39 of the 53 campuses would receive no funding under HEPR. When we look at the criticality of the projects that are in the total 165 or so individual projects.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Johnson, I appreciate that. My concern, though, is the disparity between, and I can understand the answer I just got from the governor's office. So what aren't we, if we have a significant number of campuses who are getting nothing, do we have leaky roofs there? Do we have asbestos? Do we have handicap accessibility? Do we have buildings that were vacated because new buildings were built and now those buildings are sitting and we have buildings left behind? The list that I find would be fascinating would be the list I don't see. And this is HEPR. This is supposedly your number one bonding priority. Before you build new, and before you add on, and only a fraction of it is being addressed. So can you give me some idea here about what we're not doing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pawlowski, in general, we are not replacing leaking roofs then under this $20 million proposal. We will have campuses that will continue to have leaky roofs. We will have campuses who have equipment that's on the verge of failure or on the verge of having it, a boiler, for example, being red-tagged by the state's boiler inspector. We will have those conditions with this level of funding.
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair, Mr. Johnson, I'd appreciate a list of the leaky roofs, campus by campus, boiler by boiler, asbestos by asbestos. I'd like that list.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pawlowski will be happy to show you those projects that wouldn't be funded. In fact, we can show you as well the ones that would be funded.
You can show it to me. I'd like the list.
Yeah, that's what I meant, sir.
All right. Right.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. And you know, I don't know if we want to continue to pile on now or wait till later with those questions, but I mean, you know, when I looked at the governor's request, I just assumed that he was positioning himself knowing that we were going to add more to HEPR at Minsky. Because if you look at the rationale, you know, Minsky requested $224 million in GO bonds. The University of Minnesota request was $206. They seem, you know, almost in line with the percentages that we've done in the past, considering that Minsky has twice as many kids as the U of M. I'm not sure if those are out of line. Yet Minsky just seems to be the target
you know, being hammered. The one question that we do have before you go is that darned elevator over at Winona. not a nickel. I mean, Pawlowski arranges to get me and the speaker and my dad and other people trapped in an elevator for, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours. Or at least it seemed that way. It's the sneakiest thing I've ever seen. I mean, sometimes I think they've got a hose up there saying, yeah, look at the roof is leaking, and I bring it somewhere to see that. But
so what was the problem,
all-time,
the speaker or your dad?
What's that?
What was the problem, the speaker or your dad?
I'm not sure, but we want it out. And so, but I just thought that.
Now, Mr. Chair, if I
had heard Pawlowski
that,
said
I wouldn't have been in the elevator. And I was. Mr. Chair, that's in the Maxwell renovation project, which is in the governor's request. Okay. So that's part of that project. But my concern is, and I granted I've just been focusing on Minsky here because I've turned to this section. I don't want to flip back and forth between the U. But if we're going to have buildings with leaky roofs and we're going to pass another sizable bonding bill, I don't understand it.
Template. Think of the governor's as template, and we'll probably...
Well, I was just asked a word.
Improve it.
Nimble. I don't know if that's another word we should be using here.
Nimble.
Template and nimble, or...
The nimble and a template.
Okay.
You know, we won't hop back to the university, but unless, and I don't know if we have delays information, but I think we're still trying to, I've seen a preliminary list, but... You know, the one nice thing about Minsky is at least you can see what they're talking about, and if they can elaborate, you know, break that down more. But, you know, I'm not sure. And Commissioner, you all probably have a better idea of what the University of Minnesota would do, because I don't see that similar list. So how did you arrive at that number?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if we had a specific list from the university. I think we had kind of an even larger list or examples of projects. Let me check.
All right. So what might be the case is don't turn in a list. You get less. Okay. Moving on, finally. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm not sure if people, if you'd like us to kind of go through the remaining slides. They're really pretty overview in nature. The chart on the, or the slide on the top of page 6 just lists some of the projects in the K-12 education area, the Red Lake school facilities, the Minnesota State Academies, some projects there, the Purpich Arts Center. Then kind of moving on to the next general overview, some just kind of highlights and examples of the things that are included in the environment and agriculture area. This is where we've got the wastewater funding, drinking water and wastewater treatment projects, the closed landfill, the solid waste recovery grant program, capital projects. Again, as I had mentioned earlier, these are largely projects related to local governments and competitive grant programs that the agencies manage. Land preservation and enhancement, these are some projects related to acquisition and of habitat, wildlife management acquisition. Funding to Bowser for related to the CREP program that I'm sure you're pretty familiar with. We've funded some in the past. Wetland replacement for local governments in Bowser. There's also some funding for the zoo project, $21 million. Nearly $20 million for the DNR and Met Council for state and regional park facilities, park maintenance, as well as some acquisition for new park facilities. Fisheries, acquisition, construction, waterfall habitat structures, funding for state trails, and then some of the flood mitigation projects and dam safety projects, $11 million. And then, as Representative Solberg mentioned, the $1.5 million to upgrade the existing lab facility. That of the projects that are funded in that facilities in that area is a state-owned facility, the lab part of that. And then on transportation, $141 million. Largest project is the funding to complete the North Star project. Some park and ride facilities through the Met Council, through Metro Transit, Cedar Avenue Busway, the Central Corridor Transitway, or Cedar Avenue Transitway, a kind of a mix of road and transit projects and transportation. Next, you'll see some of the local bridge projects funded, local road improvements, district headquarters at Mankato, truck station at Chaska. The Health and Human Services area, there's a number of projects, large one being the facility for sex offenders at Moose Lake, a 400-bed facility that's planned and proposed there. The system-wide or asset preservation project at regional treatment centers around the state, asset preservation projects for the Veterans Homes facilities, and the improvement to the kitchen and dining hall at Veterans Home.
Representative Grappolo, did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just a clarification for those of us who are still learning.
He's new here.
Is there a statutory requirement that trunk highway bonds be used for example, the MnDOT district headquarters?
No, Mr. Chairman and Representative, the MnDOT facilities, it's not a constitutional issue. It's the facilities and the office space and the facilities that the DOT lives and works in are generally paid for with trunk highway funds or trunk highway bonds in some cases. In this case, it typically these projects have historically been funded with trunk highway funds, current funds, and not bonds. These funds, this project is for trunk highway bonding. I think that the department, I don't think that there would be a problem funding the project, a building project, with other than trunk highway bonds or trunk highway funds. There's some constitutional issues as it relates to road projects. Not sure if that same thing applies to buildings.
Okay, so in your, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, in your expert opinion, we could use GL bonds to pay for that building.
Commissioner.
Yes.
Yes.
Now I can say it with confidence, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please continue. Oh, Representative Hausman.
No, I command.
Okay, great. Thank you. Commissioner.
Top of page 9, the criminal justice projects, the next phase of the expansion and renovation at the Faribault Correctional Facilities for $28 million. The Stillwater facility, a security unit, a new security unit there for almost $20 million. Expansion of the Shakopee Women's Prison for a little over $10 million, and then asset preservation and repair funds for the correctional facilities around the state. Under the housing and economic development area, the large project, $25 million for permanent supportive housing.
Could you just hold up on Representative Solberg?
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, I understand that there's some controversy around the security fence at Shakopee. Controversy that some people want it and the neighbors don't, or who wants it and who doesn't? Can you tell me?
And then, Commissioner, maybe to add to that, talking about the difference between the request and the governor's recommendation, because I think there's even, you know, there's a good-looking fence and an ugly fence, or however you want to describe it. But tell us about fences.
That's about $1 million difference.
Okay, Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, I'll try to see if I can explain this. The Department of Corrections initially, with their request, had almost $5.9 million request. And this, there is some controversy. Representative Solberg, I'm not aware of a lot of the specifics except what I've read in the New York Times as well, as in local press covering this issue, that there are folks who like the, it is in a very close residential area, the facility, and it's been there for a lot of years now, and that the neighborhoods and residential areas right close, and people like the feel. It's got nice grounds, and it's nice looking. So they like living in that neighborhood, and I think that there are folks who have concerns about big razor wire fences around a facility in the neighborhood. I think that the Department of Corrections is trying to balance the liability and safety issues and with the public concern about the folks who don't want a fence. I think that they've since concluded that there are some high risks with having open access to the facility. And what the department is looking at is trying to build a fence that is somewhat ornate looking on the outside so that it fits in somewhat with the neighborhood and is more secure around the inside. So their request was actually to do a couple of fences. And I think what the governor's recommending is that they do something a little bit lower cost. He had concerns about the ornate fence that would satisfy the neighbors and include kind of the high secure around the inside perimeters, and was looking to have them manage that a little bit better for lower costs.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Colbert,
it seems kind of strange, though, that that facility has been up and running for many years. I've been out there. It's a very secure facility. And it said, we've never had a problem with it without when the fence hasn't been there. And unless we are getting much more violent and terrorist women now. No. Maybe we can get a Homeland Security thing for all these terrorists.
Representative Solberg, why don't we just real quick, sure. Isn't the department here, I think they're behind Representative Mahoney,
maybe
I can't see, but I think the department might be here.
Okay.
Okay.
In public safety.
Okay. Okay. All right. We'll let it go to public safety then. Okay. Was there another question? Otherwise, Commissioner, proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The housing projects talked about the redevelopment grant program in the Department of Employment and Economic Development, $13 million. The bioscience business development programs, including an earmark for a Rochester project at $10 million, Greater Minnesota Infrastructure Grants, $7.5 million, and then some repairs to historic sites, $6.7 million. On the top of page 10 is just an example of some of the state agency projects, mostly asset preservation projects throughout the state buildings, including the larger project at the Department of Transportation, replacing the structural supports on the exterior of that building. And then, again, as I tried to clarify a little bit earlier, the things that are local projects that aren't moving through particular grant programs and agencies, a project in Itasca County, infrastructure, public infrastructure related to energy and steel plants, proposed or planned in that area, $2 million for the St. Cloud Regional Airport, $3 million for the Bemidji Event Center design, and a renewable energy project in Cochise County for $1 million. And that probably transitions a little bit into the discussion. I've included here in the packet the couple of charts that the governor used when he presented his recommendations, and he talked about his concern about these, what he's calling amenity projects. And that he thinks that because there are a large number of requests and we have this need for other state infrastructure and repairs, that we should be talking about some guidelines here so that there's some consistency. He noted some of the inconsistencies in past projects, and I think he wrestled quite a bit with liking to fund more of these projects and not being certain how he would rationalize that, I think, to some extent, given all of the needs that were listed here and some of the projects that had previously been funded.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you. To that point of calling something an amenity and a local project, and when I say this, I have to tell everyone, I do not oppose the Minnesota Zoo. I do not see it as competition to the Como Zoo, but the Minnesota Zoo is in his budget, and the Como Zoo is not, and presumably he would see that as a local amenity project, even though more people go to the Como Zoo than go to the Minnesota Zoo. And those people come from all over the state. So how do you find something local and an amenity?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, I think one of the things that we look at here is where the state's responsibilities are. And when we look at facilities in particular, and I think this is, you know, I kind of go back to Representative Solberg talking about where we're actually making different financing arrangements for buildings that are the state's responsibilities, our own office buildings. The state zoo is owned, the facilities are assets on the state's financial statements, and we look at a different level of responsibility for something like that, which is a state responsibility and obligation.
Commissioner gave my answer. That's fine.
Okay. Representative Kahn.
Yes. Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, I'm interested in what I'm seeing as a tendency from for certain localities to look at using metropolitan park funding, which was always considered to be kind of the equivalent of natural state park funding, now for things like athletic fields and stadiums. Is that something that's going to be allowed from the state when state bonds are involved? And, you know, is the state going to get into funding local athletic facilities?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I'm not sure if you're talking about a particular project or a recommendation.
I'm talking about it just as a philosophical issue. Should state bonds, should metropolitan bonds be used for formal athletic facilities, stadiums?
Wasn't the Metrodome funded that way?
No.
Sure it was.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, I think, you know, as it relates to state bonding projects, and if you're looking for a philosophical discussion about it.
I'm looking for park natural resource issues.
I guess I would say, Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, that we have regional park facilities and state park facilities, and the state generally supports totally the state park facilities. I don't know that I can really answer the question about stadiums and bonding for that. I think there are a number of things that are certainly out there as proposals that I think as we look at the large list of projects, we have to start talking a little bit about how to prioritize, because there are so much in the way of expectations and demands and against limited capacity, and whether we start looking at state ownership, state responsibility, essential state services, and then start to move down in a hierarchy.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner, I think we're going to interrupt you for a minute. Representative Darman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you would be so kind, and the members, I wish to move to reconsider the vote on House File 2623. Apparently, there's been, I don't know, 40, 50, 60 attorneys that helped craft that, but there should have been only maybe three, because there's, you know, an error. So before we, exactly, that's exactly right. A constituent of mine once sent me an email saying how many attorneys are in the legislature. I happened to shoot back and sent them my whole email list by being humorous and serious at too many, but, you know, that happened. So this will fuel more attorney jokes. Apparently we need to make a small amendment, and plus then maybe Governor Solberg would be able to lay more foundation. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would ask.
Right. Now my foundation is very strong.
All right.
But I want to know about the philosophical part.
Yep.
Representative Darman, do you want to amend House File 2623.
I think we have to.
You gotta move to reconsider the vote for House File 2623.
I'd like to move for reconsideration of the vote.
I didn't say it. Okay. Now, Representative Dorman, you have moved it. So now you can move to amend House File 20. You know, if it was a landscaper and a tire guy doing this and not lawyers, we'd get it done in a hurry.
Absolutely.
Representative Dorman moves to amend House File 2623.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 2623. Be before the committee recommended for passage to the general register, and I have an amendment, Mr. Chair, for that bill. It's an oral amendment. I think it's relatively easy.
Do you want me to read it?
Please, it's on page
our
two.
Very capable staff has put it right in front of me, and I can even read it without my glasses on. On page 2, line 2.31, after cumulatively, insert, in quotes, is for grants. Quotes.
But not the quotes. The quotes are not going there. Oh, don't put those quotes in there. People will be back here again.
Well, maybe a landscaper can't figure it out.
Well,
sorry.
You're putting those quotes in there for illustrative purposes only. But not for
all right, sorry. We'll delete the quotes. I would be glad to repeat it, Representative Mahoney.
Not with the line.
Page 2. Line 2.31, after cumulatively, insert, is for grants.
Is for a grant.
Okay.
Is for grant? Oh, it's changed again. Okay, I'm sorry. Is for grant.
Is for grant. I think it needs to be plural. Thank you. How about discussion? Representative Dorman?
Is this...
Representative Kahn.
How many mistakes are you allowed to correct in one day? Is there a limit? Is it like 3% or something?
3%, Representative Kahn. We're under that right now. Okay. All those in favor? Excuse me. Well, hold it. Representative Mahoney.
I'm just wondering, Mr. Chair, Representative Dorman, could you tell me who found this particular part? And was it a state attorney, county attorney?
Absolutely. Representative Mahoney, in a very, don't let it be said that we're not bicameral over here. I think the credit for the catch goes to Mr. Watson of the Senate Council, I think, caught this. So it was an attorney that caught the mistake of another attorney in Iowa. But exactly, probably some of the three guys disbarred. I don't know. Okay.
Anything else? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Dorman.
No. Mr. Chair, I renew.
You got to renew your motion.
That House File 2623 is amended, be passed and put on the general register.
Discussion.
Mr. Chair, this is
Representative Solberg.
Have you talked to Representative Alba? Did you pass the vote, please?
I didn't specifically, Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg. Well, I personally did not speak with Representative Knobloch. I'm told that people have him, that he's okay with us going to the General Register. So that is why the motion is to go to the General Register.
Okay, here we go. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We'd appreciate it, Representative Dorman, if you'd come back here and get this. No.
About meetings.
Commissioner, you can proceed. I think we're just about to the end.
Yes, sir.
No, I was telling the commissioner she could proceed.
And Mr. Chair, I think that I've kind of completed my presentation, so be happy to answer any other questions that people may have.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Hausman.
Not to be shy, but just there's some new language. And one of them is to change, we now have two deadline dates, preliminary request and final, and we're changing that to one. And this is a complicated process, and I wonder if a lot of people haven't used those two dates. They submit the preliminary request and then the final to, in fact, get feedback and modify the proposal. And so what concerns me is changing those 2 to 1. It certainly simplifies the process, but might we then throw a wrinkle in for some. I mean, we have lots of local governments that have to figure all this out. And
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, when we looked at the process, we submit, when we kind of submit capital requests that we have to the legislature under an earlier timeline, those that come in later before that November date, or come in later but prior to the November date, we have a lot of confusion with the two deadlines. And so our thought was that if we just get everything by the July 15th, that's what we can then submit to the legislature. And, you know, there isn't anything that would prohibit folks from sending things later, but it would be included in the recommendations that we submit to the legislature. We would have, Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, I think the problem is we're giving consideration to these things throughout the process, and then when we get things late after we've already given some consideration, it's kind of difficult to just learn about things in the November timeline. So we wanted to just have one timeline and one deadline.
Thank you.
Just that, well, yes, I mean, I don't know if when we finally get that bill before us for passage, because there are really a number of areas where he adds language. One of those is a new section of law outlining standards for asset preservation, and because we've spent some time talking about that today, it seems we shouldn't just look at numbers, but look at some of that language and see if there are any issues that we might... I don't know if when committees are seeing this, are they looking at that language too? But at any rate, just so that there aren't surprises with new language. Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. Commissioner, you pretty much done your overview.
Yes.
Pretty much overviewed us. Okay, great. We'll see if other members have questions. But I just have a couple of questions, and I thought you might be able to help me understand the rationale. Talking about veterans' home boards for a minute. If I look in my book and I look at the priorities of the veterans' home board, the governor appears to have, you know, skipped over some things. I was kind of curious about what his thoughts were. If I look at the ranking of the agency priority, asset preservation was their top priority. Minneapolis Emergency Powers number two, but number three is the Minneapolis Adult Daycare, and then the Silver Bay Master Plan. It would appear the governor skipped over both those. I'm just curious, and I apologize to the Minneapolis folks. I don't know enough about the adult daycare, but you know what the rationale was for skipping over the number three project?
Mr. Chair, I think I can talk a little bit generally about it, but maybe not real specifically. One of the concerns that we've had over recent years is that the ongoing deficiencies that come from the veterans' home, and I think that there was also in the operating budget, that they have had a deficiency many of the last few years with their budget, and difficulty managing to live within the budget that's funded for them. And I think we saw the adult daycare as somewhat of an expansion of their responsibilities and mission, and felt like until there was a little bit better management of within their existing budget, that we ought not be kind of stepping out with an expanded set of responsibilities for the Minneapolis Vets Home Board. I think, Mr. Chair, it sort of also might be a little bit related to the operating budget in this case, and some of the problems that we've had with the facility, and it's been under review by the health department, and
You'll probably see some things in the governor's supplemental budget relating to that. But I think, Mr. Chair, I think we saw this as some expansion of their mission and responsibility when we had concerns about how they were managing with their existing responsibilities.
And when you compare that, Commissioner, to the dining facility there, and again, I apologize if I'm not as knowledgeable as you on this, but is the dining facility, I guess as I looked at it, is it in dire straits, or what's the condition over there? And I apologize. I mean, I would also say, just in your defense, a lot of these questions are somewhat unfair. I, you know, was kind of surprised that maybe Deputy Dog, see, I call him Deputy Dog, Tom Hansen, somebody didn't come over because he might understand. Not that you don't, but I mean, you're sort of a numbers person, and but you're going to get put in the position of trying to answer these questions. And I apologize that, but you're here.
That's okay, Mr. Chair. I'll do my best. Mr. Chair, yes, I can tell you that the Minneapolis dining and kitchen facility is in pretty rough shape, and I think you'll see that the skipping over the daycare part of it is related to, like I say, was more of an expansion, seeing an expansion of the responsibility where the dining and kitchen facility that I visited a couple of times is in pretty rough shape, and they have a lot of difficulty using that facility well to using that facility to manage the flow of folks and moving through it. It's in really rough shape, I'd say, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. But isn't there an expansion in that as well, from 100 down to 250 seats?
Mr. Chair, yes, but it's to serve the existing population that's there. So it's expanding the kitchen to serve the needs of the current population, whereas the adult daycare was kind of moving the veterans home into a new line of responsibility.
Okay. Representative Solberg.
Can I just ask a question on page 32 of the bill? And in the back, you have the bioscience to Rochester. I think I've been you gave $20 million to Rochester development of this last year. I believe, is that correct? That's with the bioscience thing in Rochester?
Commissioner.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Silver, this is a different project. This is for...
Is it related to that one? And is it when you develop public infrastructure? I'd like to know what that is. I want to build my foundation a little bit more.
Commissioner, if you'd like, I think, I know a little bit about it, and I believe Representative Demmer, who sometimes, interesting, because sometimes you say, well, I'm not really from Rochester, so he'll give you the I'm not really from Rochester, but I think he cares an awful lot about this. Representative Demmer could probably shed more light on what's happening. Be all right, Representative Demmer.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I'm not from Rochester. I'm from Hayfield, Mr. Chair, which is 20 miles from west of Rochester. But I do represent part of Rochester, and my wife works there, and I spend a lot of time there. It's a beautiful city. Mr. Chair and members, and Representative Solberg, what that is a downtown project that's being built. This particular money would go for a public parking ramp, is what it is. That's the specific portion of it. That's the public part of it. It's in conjunction with the Rochester Area Economic Development and some of the folks there. They have a tenant for, I think, 8 of 12 floors working specifically with biotechnology and medical genomics and biosciences to come in there and take up 8 of the 10, 12 floors. They're looking at building. And the downtown area is in dire need of parking, and this would be adjacent to that, but it would be a public parking ramp, and that's what this would go towards.
Just to add more clarity to that, what this would be is and it goes to make sure we can help them in a way that's bondable. The state of Minnesota would bond for this parking ramp. The parking ramp would generate revenue. The city of Rochester is going to dedicate all of the parking revenue, not just in the new part of it, but all of that parking revenue to a office building adjacent to this parking ramp, then the Mayo, what do you call the Mayo Business Development?
Mayo Medical Ventures.
Mayo Medical Ventures has already signed a lease to occupy a good portion of this. And so,
Mr. Chairman,
it sounds like a bioscience parking ramp, but in reality it's a way to help facilitate the construction of the bioscience building.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it may be, again, a roundabout way, but isn't that generally a parking ramp? We have good experiences at the state office building, and you get a little deduction every time, every month, because it's a revenue bond. We pay for that with revenue. We pay for the parking with revenue. Here you're paying for the parking with revenue, but you're not paying for the ramp with revenue. You're paying the revenue that the parking ramp generates to build something else. So, in effect, they're using almost a revenue bond for another one. That's kind of a way to increase the size of the bonding bill by more than
3%. Mr. Chair.
We wouldn't do that intentionally, unless we wanted to. Representative Demmer.
Mr. Chair, I don't have the specifics of this project in front of me. This is not the total cost of the ramp. This would cover some construction. There's a significant portion being covered by the community itself and the Economic Development Authority there, land acquisition as well as some other improvements. So this is not going to finance the whole thing. It's definitely a participation with the local unit.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not against the project. I want to understand.
I understand.
I want to understand when we have a parking ramp, that's generally a revenue, and revenue bond would pay for it. So normally, if you have a parking ramp, if we could say state will issue the bonds, but they're revenue bonds, and you pay off the parking ramp with the revenue that you generate from the revenue, as we've done with the state office building, as we do with all the rest of the state employees in the capillary complex and other places. It's a little bit strange to see that diverted from that to another project to pay off the bonds for other projects. Then why aren't we using that type of thing? It's an increase of the 3%. I'm really surprised at that. I want to know what more infrastructure is.
Right. And I think, Representative Solberg, it sounds like a good... We don't have a target yet, you know. Well, I wish we did. Probably a good idea for a hearing, so we'll probably bring the Rochester folks into explain that
I think maybe I think we should. Very good project, but let's be up front.
Yeah. No, and we're trying to give you as much information as we can. My understanding is that I think it'll even be more than just this portion. The city of Rochester is going to take the revenue on that entire... on that entire ramp and dedicate that revenue towards paying off the bonds on the adjoining building. And so the city of Rochester, as I understand, the city of Rochester will sell revenue bonds backed by not just the expansion, but the total parking facility to pay for and guarantee those revenue bonds.
I understand the scheme. It's just that it's a nice scheme. Okay.
Representative Kelleher.
Mr. Chair, I would be remiss if, since we're talking about this, I have raised this with a couple of folks from Rochester that I think that they need to either consider a city revenue bond for this or some other financing mechanism, because in my limited memory of this, I don't think we do this very often, and so we just need to be cognizant of that, and I have talked with a couple people about it, but I don't think we need to do, we want to see this project go forward, but I also think it sounds a little sketchy about using the revenue from the ramp to pay the bonds on the other project. So I just think we need to get clear here from bond counsel as well as what the Department of Finance would like to see on something like this so the project can be successful.
Representative Hausman.
Well, I wonder, the new language on page 38, line 12, that there's no sentence in which that's somehow connected, that we're putting in a new category to renovate parking structures. Does that relate in any way? Page 38, line 12.
Commissioner, do you know
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, yes, that is related, the funding for this project, it's creating a program for bioscience business development public infrastructure grant program. There has been a public infrastructure grant program where often the state money would be used for a broader project to maybe provide some of the public infrastructure to an industrial park in a rural community or something like that. Because these are projects that
the Department of Employment and Economic Development looks at that will stimulate some business growth. And typically a community will say, we can attract some growth to our community. We want to build an industrial park and attract businesses. But when it's for the private entities and businesses occupying it, we can't have the state bonds be used. There's not the public ownership. So what typically occurs is that the public state-funded money would be used, the state bond money would be used for wastewater, roads. You just here talked about the Medtronic project, which is public infrastructure, the roads in Ramsey County that are related to the project. This is very similar to that. It's looking at, instead of just the public infrastructure program that currently exists, it's to make one that is targeted to bioscience business developments. But again, we still have the issue of the need to have the state money be used for public ownership, and so that's why the parking is the thing that's financed. But this is really looked at as a component of the broader project that is enhancing the bioscience business development, the business incubator that the city is participating in. This is the state's contribution for a portion of that broader project to attract those jobs.
Representative Singleton, Kelleher, is on point or?
On point.
Mine's different. So.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, I think there's a difference between public infrastructure like roads, sewers, those sorts of things, versus a parking ramp. A parking ramp can generate revenue. Those other things, generally, we do not in this state have a history of generating revenue by making people either pay as they drive down the road. So I guess I do, I would like to see some sort of look at the when we do bond for parking facilities and when we don't. Because I have always been told, and, you know, I represent a city who's built a lot of parking facilities. And there's been a few nonprofits who've come my way who've looked for us to build their parking facility here at the state in conjunction with a very worthy project. I always turn them to the city to do a revenue bond instead, because that's what I have been told coming up through this process is the proper thing to do. So I'm a bit worried here that if we start to go down this path, hey, we can probably build a lot of parking ramps. So I just think we need to do this the right way and not open the floodgates so that we are building parking ramps instead of building things that may generate a lot of other sorts of residual, either investment or revenue for the state. So that's my concern. I wonder if you can provide that, and maybe I can, you know, learn a little bit more about when we have and when we haven't. But my concern on this is that parking creates revenue, and there is a good financing mechanism available either through the state or through the local unit of government here, and I'm not sure we want to take up valuable space. So that's a concern. I want to see the project move forward, but I also want to make sure that we don't create a domino effect about how we are financing something new that then creates.
Very quickly, Mr. Chair, to this point, who is designated to own the building alongside the parking ramp?
Urban Endeavor, is the city of Rochester?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, I don't recall.
We'll find out.
I want to say Rochester Area Economic Development, but I could be mistaken on that. We should find out. And it'd be best to have those folks come here directly and talk about how they're doing it. There's no attempt being made here to do something under the table.
And what is the cost? And I'd like to, another question is the cost of that building, right, as well.
I think it's a good idea to have a hearing and bring them up. And because if we are, you know, setting precedents, we ought to know. We ought to at least, maybe we'll still decide to do it, but we should do it with full knowledge. Representative Tingleston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My comment doesn't have anything to do with parking ramps. A few minutes ago, there was something about the Vets Home Board, and I just want to put something on the record. You know, I chair the Veterans Affairs Committee, and there was a reference made about some of the issues being or not being resolved or whatever there. And I just want to say for the record that most of the issues that were being looked at last fall were based on a shortage of personnel at the Minneapolis Vets Home. And right now they're at nearly 100% staffing. So I know that they did recently have a visit by the Minnesota Department of Health, and they got good ratings. There was no citations, and so basically it's being looked at as the problems resolved, and certainly, you know, people will be watching in the future, but it was basically a personnel issue that's now been handled. Thank you.
Commissioner, if you turn for a moment and think about transportation for just a little bit, and if I recall, is it the governor's request for Central Corridor $2.5 million?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
And you know, I think Ramsey County's request was, if my memory's correct, $50 million. Will seem like a real big difference there. I'm just kind of wondering how you arrive at $2.5 million, what you get for $2.5 million, and to where we didn't have Commissioner Bennett here, but we'll ask him later. But you know, what the heck, large difference. Help us understand that.
Mr. Chair, I think that there are probably some folks from the Met Council that could be a lot more specific about this project and the rationale for the governor's recommendations. My understanding is that they are still working on getting some federal approval for the project. Obviously, $2.5 million doesn't go very far. I think in some ways it's sitting here as somewhat of a placeholder. The governor wanted to indicate his support for the project, and yet I think that there are a lot of questions that need to be answered before we're ready to move ahead and begin funding this project, and mainly related to the requirements of meeting federal requirements for funding and getting federal approval for funding.
Representative Hausman.
And pardon it for me to speak for the governor, but I think in this case this is even a positive sign, because I know with Northside Corridor that he didn't put anything in until he got the numbers from the federal government, and that was always his reason. And in this case, he has put this small amount in even before those numbers. So to me, I think one could look at this as his way of saying that he's on board. That's at least how I'm seeing it.
Commissioner, if we look at the grants to local political subdivisions, and Representative Fulberg may know more about it, but some of the stuff like Itasca County, I think the $7 million figure is there. I'm just curious, how did you arrive at $7 million, and what is our $7 million, can I do the project for that? Do you have information that would help us understand why that's enough money?
Mr. Chair, I'll take a stab at it. Again, I may not be able to be exactly fluent on all of the details of this project. In Itasca County, there are two projects. One is an energy project that is planned and proposed, and one is a steel mill project. They share joint public infrastructure, whether it's roads or railroads or pipelines or some other kinds of things there. And I think that this was a contribution to the public infrastructure that would support both of those projects. And I would say, Mr. Chair, part of the rationale that the governor used for funding this these projects, and in this case, is that when he was first elected governor and we faced a difficult budget situation, he unallotted funds that were allocated to the 21st Century Minerals Fund, saying that we shouldn't be setting money aside in a pot to when we don't have particular projects, and if there's something that actually materializes, then they should seek funding. So he felt some responsibility to see that, look at these projects that have some potential for creating a pretty big economic impact in this area, and so wanted to lend some state bond funds in support of the public infrastructure for those projects.
Right. The request was over $56 million. So what do you get for the $7
million? Mr. Chair, my understanding is that it supports some of the joint infrastructure, whether it's roads or pipelines or, like I say, railroads, I think, that would support both of these projects.
And I, you know, I think that it's contingent on really getting fuller participating partners in those projects in terms of financing and the other entities that will move ahead with.
You referenced the unallotment. How much was the unallotment?
49
million dollars.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, the governor has always said that when we had real projects, he'd find the money for us to give it back. We'll gladly take back the $49 million, and then you don't have to have the $7 million in bonding.
Yeah.
But with that said, Mr. Chair, we do appreciate the governor recognizing the importance of this bonding request. Mr. Chairman, we'll have detailed engineering pre-design costs associated with this project so that as we go forward we can make very rational decisions on prioritizing what needs to be done in order to make these projects go forward.
But the
$7 million, I don't know exactly, other than some design. When we look at that, the pre-design will give you numbers on a very detailed, so we can all look at that. I do want to point out on page 84 of this particular project, 85 when they're in, that this does return to the state each year $15 to $18 million per year when it's up and running, just the seal project itself. Some of that in the form of to the school trust fund, as it mines the school trust fund land. So,
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, relative to this conversation, you know, whether you're talking about the project in Itasca County, whether you're talking about bioscience development, these are good for the state of Minnesota. On page 39 of the bill, it does talk specifically about the public infrastructure grant program, and it sets very clear guidelines. It does talk about parking ramps for specific purposes, and it happens to be bioscience in this case. We know that other states are throwing upwards of billions of dollars into bioscience development and medical technology, biotechnology, medical genomics. We're trying to find ways in the state of Minnesota, both here in the Twin Cities as well as in the Rochester area because of the Mayo Clinic and because of the technology and the medical facilities we have there, trying to find ways to feed this economic furnace, if you will. And I think on page 39, it does lay out pretty specifically that this sort of a project, like we're talking about in Rochester, is for bioscience specifically. And I would maintain, we can argue whether that's a good idea or not, it's economic development. It quite frankly be the same discussion as putting infrastructure in up north for a steel plant that's, you know, public infrastructure, but there's only one user of the infrastructure, and that would be the steel plant. So as we look at economic development, we have to make sure we're thinking along that lines, whether it's a bioscience type thing that, quite frankly, is Twin Cities as well as Rochester and maybe even St. Cloud, that whole corridor and other places, as well as other areas in the state that we're putting public dollars into creating jobs and creating economic development.
Mr.
I guess I would submit that we have some similar things going, and the discussion maybe would broaden into all of these areas.
Representative Solberg. Mr. Chairman, we passed the last bill for Medtronics. I wanted to lay some good foundation of infrastructure. I think it's $14 million for infrastructure for a particular business, Medtronic. I think it's great economic development stuff we should do. We need to do that as a public-private partnership. $7 million doesn't get us there, but it's a start. It's a recognition. $49 million would, and that was the design of the 21st Century Mineral Fund together to begin with, was for that type of thing. But we will have specific breakdown of what the priorities need to be in order to get this to go. And one additional thing, I just met with the CEO of the steel project, and they have a bank out of London that is doing the financing of it. It's about a $1.6 billion construction project. Be the largest single user of natural gas in the state of Minnesota, the largest construction project in the state of Minnesota, and if you put the energy project alongside of it and put another $700 million in, you have over a $2 billion within 2 miles of each other using this infrastructure. And if in Alabama they just did a $500 million project in a steel-related industry, and the state of Alabama gave them $60 million to attract them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Solberg, I'm in agreement with you. You said the $7 million won't get us there. The $8 million does get us there in Rochester, and we'll have jobs starting next year. And it's important that we work on both fronts. But as we look at trying to compare a parking ramp for a nonprofit organization, with all due respect, and it is a revenue source, I understand that, to something like biotechnology, medical genomics, where we're trying to evolve an entire industry, we need to find ways. And we need to find ways that are appropriate and that we can be consistent in our policy. But we do need to find ways. And I submit that this
is the question I asked is how much the cost of the building is. Because quite frankly, I may be better off to just fund the building. Be more direct on it.
Right. I think that's why we would like to have more information on the project. And I think what I hear the concerns are is, you know, that's an addition to the bill. It's not like that's existing statutes we're just using. And I think that we're constructing a way to do that parking ramp. This is not, you know, something that we have had a long-standing history of. And I think what I hear Representative Kelleher and others saying is that maybe we want to do it, but let's just make sure we understand what it is that we're doing. And, you know, information is always a good thing.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I may,
Representative Dunner,
just expand on what you just said, finding ways to do parking ramps, we're finding ways to invest in biotechnology and medical genomics. And that's what page 39 of the bill does. It outlines a whole new category of funding to allow us to invest in that. Parking ramps is a piece of it. But we're talking about telecommunications, streets, roads, bridges, parking ramps, facilities that support basic science, clinical research, and research infrastructure. The parking ramps are a piece of a much, much bigger issue. And I think whether it's the projects up north, which are pretty exciting, or something like this, these are the things that will be the economic engine that drives the state and drives our revenues through a lot of the other things we want to be able to do.
Representative McNamara Van Housman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's a great idea to get the folks from Rochester here. What about, it got to be real late at night when we had that hearing up in Grand Rapids. I believe it's Minnesota Steel and...
well, we got them on a schedule, too.
That's what my question.
We need, we need more information.
And the energy one, too.
Absolutely.
Good. Thank you.
Absolutely. Glad to do that. But yeah. Give us a little bit of lead time, if we can, Mr. Chair, because...
Falcola will do that.
Well, it would be also very good to have the banking people, the financial institutions from London and New York, if you want them, in the room as well.
I look at this, whether it's the Central Corridor or this, I think at the end of the day, if those projects are in the final bill, they're going to be larger numbers, and it's not dissimilar to, I think, the bonding bill that we passed out of committee and off the floor last year. I was pretty open and honest with folks saying that it was artificially low. I mean, they didn't know what they were going to do in the whole North Star Corridor, was killing themselves. And so in some ways I think that what the governor has here is a bill that even he knows is artificially low, and I think that's why he has, sounds like he's open to increasing it, because you're sort of picking 3-4 projects and saying I support them, but I still want to keep this at 8-11, so I can't fully fund them. And that's the way it appears to me. And so, and I'm not hearing any other rationale for these numbers, so until I can miss otherwise, I get it. I understand that it's part of the dance. So Representative Hausman.
I just wanted to call attention to on page 40, lines 15 and 16. If we know there's even a percentage that I should know that I'm not ready to quote, the number of businesses that fail. I mean, good business plans and so forth, but they fail. And page 40, lines 15 and 16. If I were Rochester or Itasca County, I'd be a little nervous. A commitment from the governing board to repay the grant if the milestones are not realized by the completion date. I mean, that is, for a local government, I would think, a little unnerving.
And your ducks in a row.
And even if you think you have your ducks in a row, the simple fact of the matter is businesses sometimes fail. And so, I mean, that is new language, and I would think if we're moving with that, if you're a local government affected by any of these, I would think you'd want to be very clear that you knew what you were taking on if we add that new language.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Solberg,
Representative Hauser, I think that's an excellent observation. The Itasca County on the steel mill will not go forward without commitment from the financial community that they're ready to put in $1.6 billion. There's no need for it at that particular point. But also, if you don't have the processes in place this year for it, then that won't go forward because, as I understand it, as they're looking at the financial community is also saying, why would I loan $1.6 billion to this project when you can't get natural gas there? Or you can't get into the place? Or you can't get assured that there's a railroad there? And so that's why we're trying to set the priorities, trying to be reasonable, and we'll put in the contingency that there isn't a dime sold on it until the rest of the project is in place. And if they're putting in $1.6 billion, I'm confident that it's going to go.
Commissioner, and if I was out of the room, you covered this, I apologize, but I want to go back to the grants to local units of government, so I want to talk about a couple. Goes back to what the standard is for what the governor thinks we ought to include and what ought not to be included. And think about the request from the St. Cloud Airport. You know, kind of interesting that, you know, this project was on there last year and, you know, everybody thought it was, well, I shouldn't say everybody, but, you know, people thought, oh, jeepers, we can't do that, it's a terrible project, blah, 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 blah. This year, it's a good project. And so I'm curious how that works, but also, and I have to be careful because when I say something, people think I don't like the St. Cloud Airport. Not my point. My point is, if I look at something like the Lewis, and the one that stands out to me is the Lewis and Clark water system, which to me, you know, at least on par or maybe even fits the qualifications that the governor laid out better than this. And so I'm curious how or why or what, you know, what is the rationale on that one?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry that I'm not sure that I can really enlighten you on the St. Cloud project. I'm not as familiar with it. I know that we've seen the Lewis and Clark water project around for a number of years, and we've often had some concerns about the bondability because I understand some of the improvements would actually be made outside of the state boundaries. And so I know that there are some bonding kinds of questions with that project. But I'm sorry, I will try to get some information about the St. Cloud Airport project. I'm just not as familiar with that project.
Well, I think Lewis and Clark before, and it's the reason some of the infrastructure is outside of the state of Minnesota is a three-state project. And okay. So I think the water comes from, Iowa, mm-hmm. South Dakota, and eventually the beneficiaries are our communities. And so I'm wondering, just still trying to figure out what that standard that the governor wants us to use for the inclusion of local projects. What made St. Cloud stand out relative to Lewis and Clark? And what changed in a year? The project changed a lot or something else in St. Cloud happened?
Mr. Chair, I'll try to see what I can find out about the St. Cloud project. I'm just not as familiar with it.
I have to add that to your list of homework.
Okay.
Things you're going to find
homework
out.
Homework assignment.
Let's see, we're getting the deck. You're going to get back to us on the deck, St. Cloud Airport. Talk a little bit, and this is in the area of transportation, and go to balance. If about $75 million in Metro Transit projects, and there's $30 million in roads, of which probably most of it will go into that rural area, but certainly not all of it. How did you balance that part of it, rural metro? It seems a little bit out of whack.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if obviously with some of the projects like the North Star project being a larger project here, that there was necessarily an attempt to say let's look at the transportation projects and balance them between transit and roads or metro and greater Minnesota. I think that the North Star project is here at this funding level because of the earlier kind of commitment to really kind of complete the obligation to complete the project. I think we have ongoing when we look at the local roads. Again, it's, you know, I would kind of move to that
issue of state responsibility and ownership versus local responsibility and ownership, and do we have more obligation to take care of the state needs? I know that we have, for a number of years, supported the local bridge and the local local bridge for a longer standing period. Although there are other local sources, we've supported local bridge projects with state bond funds historically and for some time now, but I think you need to kind of think about what are the things that are a state responsibility. Obviously, the transportation system generally is a large, broad partnership between state and local facilities and infrastructure.
Back up to what you just said. Who owns the North Side Corridor?
Well, Mr. Chair, that's a good question. I think we're getting some sort of land lease. I actually am not familiar with.
But I don't believe it's the state. I heard what you said. You said, you know, we've got this higher state obligation to, in the case of the zoo versus the Como Zoo,
right,
that they were smart enough to get it as a state zoo, you know, and maybe the zoo in the country's got some local contribution, except for that one, but okay. But I was just curious. It's not the state-owned North Star Corridor, and so I was just curious what you meant there when you said that there was a higher state obligation to that than the local roads and bridge fund. I was curious about that.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's a good question. I'm not sure that I am aware of the ownership. I'm assuming that it's state operation of the North Star Corridor.
Indirect, isn't it the Metropolitan Council come in here somewhere? Representative Singlestead, perhaps.
I'm looking at the transportation section.
And I'm not anti-Northstar, as you know. I'm just
right,
trying
no,
to.
No, I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. There is a Minnesota Statute 174.82 that says that, the responsibility for all aspects of commuter rail, including planning, developing, constructing, and operating and maintaining, are with MnDOT. So that's what the current law says.
He says. Let's talk about, when we're on zoos for a minute, let's talk about the zoo request so I understand that one as well. I think you've got, is it $8 million for asset preservation for the zoo and $13 million for other items? Three of which is part of last year's bill? Or what is that in the $3 million? Tell us about the zoo.
Okay, Mr. Terrell.
Are there any polar bears out there?
Bruce
got polar bears.
I think it was penguins that they were looking for, maybe.
I like polar bears. Man.
Penguins are popular lately.
I like polar bears.
Yeah, they're good. Polar bears are good.
Don't you like polar bears?
Really, this committee loves polar bears. We don't know why.
They're
exactly.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure again that I can do justice to actually my understanding of the details of the project, but the zoo submitted a request for to continue in the master plan that they have developed and to add a component to the plans and to begin to further that project as part of their master plan. My understanding of the governor's recommendations is that there's actually, besides the asset preservation of $8 million, there's $10 million to continue along with a new phase in the master plan, and $3 million that would actually enhance some things that were done in last year's project. I'm not sure, Mr. Chair, that I can be much more specific. My knowledge of the details on this is limited.
Right. Well, and, you know, and we're just trying to understand it. We're a pro-zoo committee. We like zoos. We do, you know, just I think the committee asked questions. So before I'm not smart enough to ever, you ask a question in public and I'm going to have 40 phone calls saying, why don't you like the zoo? I'm not saying that. The committee and other members have questions about it and we like polar bears.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, I understand, especially when the request is of one amount and the governor's making a different recommendation and this project had a number of phases. I'm just
not sure that I'm aware of all the details of the project, but again, I'm sure that information is available in the budget pages, and I can follow up on that as well.
Great. Are there other questions of the commissioner? Seeing no other questions, the commissioner, just so I review the homework that you have.
Okay.
If you're going to get back to us on that deck, find out what the... I mean, to be honest, I asked the chief of staff, the deputy chief of staff, and I didn't get an answer, so I thought that was rather odd, but okay. Find out what's going on the deck. You're going to get back to us on why the St. Cloud Airport all of a sudden became a high priority, in particular relative to other projects. Not that we're anti-St. Cloud Airport, but we're just trying to get a feel of the standard.
Mm-hmm.
I think you are going to get us at least some kind of a rough estimate on what would happen with the 2.5%. But Representative Solberg said don't spend a lot of time. What else? It seemed like there was one more item. Anyone remember what it is?
Parking?
The whole parking deal. But I think we're going to have parking day, so we've got to get to the bottom of that parking thing in Rochester.
Yeah, I think, Mr. Chair, if I understand, Representative Kelleher was asking about what we have historically done with parking ramps. I'm not sure that I'll try to see what we can do.
Any other homework for the commissioner that we should have? You've been very patient and tolerant, and we appreciate your time and your information. Before we adjourn,
just let me.
Oh, Representative Kahn, no.
Park funding for athletic fields.
Regional park funding for athletic fields. This doesn't have anything to do with De La Salle, does it?
Oh, I couldn't possibly.
All right, I'm just checking. It sounds like I hear that popping up all
over. Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, I'm not sure I understand
regional
the assignment.
Funding. State regional park funding. We haven't used them for athletic fields.
State regional park funding or the Met?
Yes. Well, Metro. It's state funds, but it goes to Metropolitan.
Right. So you've got that regional park thing and right. Okay.
That constitutes the regional park.
Then let's see. We got the minutes and Representative Murphy. Don't we forget the minutes. Representative Murphy.
I just have a request of staff when you're asking for the Itasca project people when they're coming to give testimony. I specifically would like testimony on how the Excelsior plans on transmitting the energy that they produce in northern Minnesota to metro Minnesota.
Right.
That is absolutely key.
Right. The transmission line question. Right. Well, and I think it's a whole host of questions. You know, if you look at the coal regasification or whatever they call it, the price of oil it is today, does it make sense? Do we really have to put money in, or does the plant float now? You know, at $30 a barrel, it probably doesn't. At $60, maybe it does without our help. I don't know, but we'll find out. Good point. Anyone want to move the minutes of the 84th session? No, 84th session, the 11th meeting. Representative Kahn moves the minutes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The minutes are adopted. Hold it. If you take your book, you're responsible. Did you see the string? But if you leave the book,
then you are.
Then Larissa's responsible for it.
Rory.
Oh, Rory is. All right. So, with that, members, and thank you.